Hey listeners, is your morning cup of coffee tasting a little less flavorful than you expected? The secret to a great cup is starting with fresh beans, and at Joe Bean Roasters, they roast and ship daily, so you get super fresh coffee every single time. If you want to level up your morning routine, check out their new Guide to Brewing Better Coffee at Home, which covers everything from grind size to water quality. You can get cheap shipping straight to your door or choose convenient local pickup at Joe Bean or at Peppermint. Head to JoeBeanRoasters.com and use the promo code LUNCHADOR10 at checkout for 10% off your order. Thanks to Joe Bean for sponsoring the Lunchador Podcast Network.
There he is.
Welcome to Dialed In. I'm Wade Reed.
I'm Aaron Pascucci.
And we're putting it together however we can again tonight because I am slightly under the weather, running a low-grade fever. First day of a low-grade fever and didn't want to make my brothers in the bean too sick. So here we are.
We've got
how my week's going. How's your week going, Aaron?
I've been doing great, actually. Had a lot of really just good things going on at school. Most of my kids are like motivated and doing what they want. So like I walk in and I'm just facilitating them doing things they want to do. It's like a dream for a teacher, right?
Yeah. I mean, if they're motivated, I feel like that's got to be like half the job. Just being like, no, this is a thing you should learn.
Right.
Yeah. Or like, here's a fun way to learn. Yeah. Any of that.
And sometimes I get to manipulate them into doing cool things I want to learn. So like, I've been wanting to do like bleach tie dye for like months and months. And I was like, hey, who wants to do tie dye? And five of them were like, me, I do. I'm like, perfect.
That's great. Chris, how's your week?
Oh man. Week's okay. I'm about prepping to go to New Orleans for the first time. So
no.
I'm really looking forward to that.
That's fair.
I expect the beignet report.
Yeah. You know what? I spent a good amount of time looking into coffee, and there is a bit of a scene that's going, even with all the, you know, standard New Orleans stuff. So
yeah.
I'm intrigued to try that out and see how it goes, because it's obviously a town not known for specialty coffee. But one I'm excited to go visit. And then just got back from Pittsburgh last weekend and went for Pittsburgh Fringe. I did a bunch of previews for that and got to go to a few places there. Now that scene is starting to pop real good. There's a couple really interesting new places that our friend Bob from Ugly Duck gave me to go to, and really, really enjoyed visiting that. You know, it's definitely an improving coffee scene.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, and those Fringe episodes on Just Can't Not were really good.
They were
really interesting. Like, I mean, obviously it's things that like don't overlap with my interests.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to this going like, why is this so compelling? But like, I think you did an excellent job. I think the people you interviewed did an excellent job. And like, yeah, I can absolutely see why like just listening to those, someone would want to go. So that's really cool that you got to head down there and check that out.
Yeah. And to be honest, I'm kind of hoping to do more. I'm going to reach out to like one step bigger Fringe than Rochester and see if I can start to get involved. Cause I've been loving the process. I mean, interviewing interesting people who are doing the thing just because they can and want to. I mean, that's everything I love in creative outlets, and why shouldn't I feel like I can contribute to what the, you know, to that infrastructure of Fringe in a more robust way. So I'm really excited to see what else I can do with it.
That's terrific. Yeah, it's been good. I remember the ones before Rochester Fringe were also super just like captivating. Like you could just really lock in on those. Like I enjoyed them quite a bit. So while we're not talking about coffee, can I give you guys, like, you know, my other love is baseball, right?
Yeah.
Besides yes. Coffee.
And I wanted to real quick shout something out that happened baseball wise. So were you guys familiar with the World Baseball Classic, kind of like the World Cup for baseball? You know, like,
yeah, I'm familiar.
Yeah, like a lot of so there were however many teams, 16, I think. They played pool play. They got eight of them got through the tournament. Venezuela won against Team USA in the final. Awesome game. Loved that game, even though Team USA lost. But one of the more interesting storylines was Team Italy, which is really funny because you wouldn't expect Team Italy to have a great baseball team. Most of the Italian players were Americans with Italian names. Right. I remember sending a roster to someone and they were like, did they just pick anyone with an Italian enough sounding name? And it turned out, I think they went back like two generations. So you, like your great, maybe three generations, like your great grandparents. If one of them was born in Italy, you could play for the team, which was like really cool. Cause they got a lot of major league players. They made it to the semifinal. It was really cool. They did a home run celebration where every time you hit a home run, you go in the dugout and Vinny Pasquantino, that's the first baseman and captain's actual name. He plays for the Kansas City Royals. He's a total vibes guy. I love him. He pulled a shot of espresso.
What?
And was great. Yeah. I'm sure it was just pods, right?
Sure.
But they would pull an espresso and you'd have to drink the shot of espresso every time you hit a home run. Then they started putting the numbers of every player who hit a home run on this espresso machine, right? This pod espresso machine. And then they auctioned it off after the tournament.
Yes.
And they raised funds for the Southwest Autism Research and Resource Center.
Oh, my gosh.
Which I was just like, you know, if you love coffee, if you love baseball like me, like, this is just the ultimate feel-good story. I'm, like, so excited. The bidding, like, started at $5,000. I have had a hard time tracking down what it went for. But yeah, it's just really cool for them to take that aspect of like their vibes and their fun and just this cool international play for baseball and do some good with it.
I also love the idea that as long as your name's close enough and you go back a few generations, yeah, you can play for our team. It's perfectly fine.
I mean,
it really was funny.
Well, the honest truth is, by those standards, I could have played.
Pasquini absolutely would have made it. Absolutely.
And my great grandparents were the ones who were born there and came over.
Perfect.
So.
I'm pretty sure there was a Santucci as a pitcher. There was an Allegheri. There was Caglioni. Like, it was awesome. They were so much fun. But that's where my two worlds met. And I had to sport, you know, the Red Wings hat tonight.
Yeah. And every time somebody walked, they said, "Oh, I'm walking here."
Yeah.
That's how Italian they are. Is like, okay, they're all Jersey Italians.
I got one more for you since you brought it up. Besides the home run celebration, you know, usually when you get on base, you do something to the dugout. You make some kind of gesture to the dugout, right? So like the Dodgers have their like wave thing in the like right now the Red Sox have this, like they put their hands up like this and you can either do a hip thrust or you can do this. And that goes back to like one of their most famous players was on TikTok. Like he got TikTok famous doing this dance that had like this weird hip thrust in it. The Italian team, what do you think their single double like from the bases celebration was?
Yeah.
Yeah, buddy, there was this.
The two fingers and the thumb.
It was so good. So they just leaned into a bunch of stereotypes. Like even when they would win, they would play opera. Like,
of course. Fantastic.
So, just leaned into every stereotype. And then to do some good with the espresso machine. I just, you know, love it. Love it for them.
All
so
in.
That's so great.
Super cool.
I gotta keep going. Cool.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I got a fun coffee story today. So I was at work and needed some help on something. I'm doing IEP write-ups. And so, you know, born science teacher. Now I'm making stuff. No special ed formal training, right? So I go to one of my coworkers. I said, hey, could really use some help on this IEP stuff. I also am going to do a special on the Down syndrome chat. So I got my dad's chat coming up tomorrow. We got 35 dads who are going to show up on Zoom. It's going to be awesome. But the next episode, I want to go over IEP stuff for all their kids, right? So I come back and she goes, I go, you know, let me know if I can do anything for you. And she looks at me, she goes, I need some of your coffee.
So. Is this the same one who needed a cup of coffee and you made some of the Pacamara yeast maceration?
No, the best. I don't know if it's the best part or the second best part. It's a different coworker. So like it's getting around that, you know, I've got like specialty coffee sitting in my room ready to brew. So
had the hookup. Yeah. You're the plug.
I wanted to throw back two things to our last podcast there. I referenced a YouTube guy, and his full name is Lance Hedrick.
Lance Hedrick.
Yeah, he was the guy I referenced as a new James Hoffman, so to speak, but I don't even know if that's a fair comparison.
No, but he's a very creative guy and also does a really nice job with content. I think he does pretty detailed reviews, so it's, you know, certainly somebody worth looking into.
Definitely worth looking into. I like watching him. He's fairly entertaining. I don't feel spoken down to. You know, he speaks at a good level for understanding and things.
Awesome.
The other thing is that drink that I got at Ugly Duck was the Channel Orange. So if you're, you know, baristas or coffee shops listening to this, here's what this drink is. It's espresso, salted bergamot caramel sauce, orange bitters, salt, and your choice of milk. So,
and it is a delight. I have had the pleasure of having that, and it's really, yeah, really tasty.
10 minutes, first Ugly Duck mention. That's,
I know,
that's
pretty good
for us. Good.
I was gonna throw something out there. I was like, maybe I should just let it go slide under, and we'll see what happens there.
Yeah.
So
no, I've actually spent a little bit of time at the bar at AMFM and had a couple people bring that drink from Ugly Duck up to me as like,
really?
This is like a cool thing that they've made. Yeah, it's interesting because it sounds kind of simple. It's almost like that drink that Marvin was telling us about at what was the place that he went to? Well, I'm definitely not feeling right.
The one in California.
Yeah, but that drink, it sounds really simple, but then like it's just, you know, like apparently when you have it, it's just super tasty, memorable, and bring something out.
Well, and
really
it's all about execution, right?
Yeah.
So I got another fun question for you. So over the break there, I went to visit my brother in Connecticut. Actually, Chris, you might know this.
Mm.
He took me to a pastry place called Julian's.
No, I haven't heard of it.
So he was telling me that this guy's been interviewed by like Food Network and Food and Wine, and you know, he's blowing up, and they had to move from like his garage basically to this new space, which is huge. I asked for a espresso, and I got it in a plastic, or not a plastic cup, but a paper cup. Like a to-go cup. And my thought was, is it ever appropriate to give an espresso in a to-go cup?
I mean, if you're taking it to go, yeah.
But I guess the larger question is, should you be taking it to go, right?
I mean,
it's an ounce and a half or 2 ounces of liquid.
My personal opinion is, yeah, if there is an option, I obviously want to have it in some sort of non-paper cup if I can help it, and preferably not plastic.
Right.
But, you know, I understand that some places only do things to go, so it is what it is. I don't find it as pleasurable, especially something I want to
enjoy,
be there in for a second and, you know, attack it and go for it. It's just like where, you know, if you go, when I would order like steak or something else, they ask, how would you like it cooked? I'm like, properly. Like, you know what you do. You know what you're doing. Cook it right. The right way.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I want it the right way. Give it to me. They're like, would you like it, you know, here to go? I'm like, I'm not a terrible person. I would like it here. If I have the option, I think if you have the option and you don't have to immediately leave and you have like 2 minutes, don't be a terrible person. Drink out of a ceramic cup.
Right.
It's a delight.
Yeah, absolutely. I have like the worst reputation for being the worst snob ever. When it comes to these things, I do think it's proper to drink it out of ceramic or glass or not paper. However,
yeah.
Have you guys been to Kopani yet?
No, I saw you did, and I was super jealous.
Same.
Yeah, I have been twice, and
oh,
the reason
awesome.
I went twice because the first shot I got of their Ace was so good. I had to go back and try it again. I liked the milk drinks I got a bag from them too. You know, it's awesome because of how the city kind of makes them work out their thing, right? Like they have to be classified as a pop-up, which means they can't have any seating, which means like, what would the point of ceramic be for them?
Sure.
Is that right? So the two espressos I've had from them, which were excellent, just excellent, were both in paper. So I feel like, you know, the, just fate is forcing me to change my view on this. I obviously think it's proper to drink espresso out of non-paper, non-plastic, but the some of the best shots I've had lately have been in papers, so I don't know what to say about
that. Hey, shout out to shops that are to go only, whether by choice or not by choice.
Yeah, exactly. And the drink I was thinking of is at Hooked Venice. That's what it was that Marvin was telling us about. Hooked Venice.
Cool.
So we've gone 15 minutes without even getting into our topic.
It's a great start. So,
yeah, I love that. But awesome thoughts. I mean,
yeah, real man, quick shout out to that coffee place. The coffee they sent me, which was great, was Those Guys Coffee. So shout out to them. And then when you get bored, look up a Wega, WEGA espresso machines. That was the other thing I would notice was interesting. So
very cool.
And if you want one of those espresso machines, I have a hookup with a wholesale warehouse.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. I've actually been looking into those lately because they're on the cheapish side, and trying to figure out if some of my wholesale or potential wholesale want to go with that. With the, I've always said it Wega. Is it Wega? I don't know if they want that direction. So.
I speak like the suburban white guy I am, you know. So
I don't saying these things wrong. I don't know. Like that's not like Simonelli, right?
I'm Chris Lindstrom, the host of the Food About Town podcast. If you want to learn more about the Rochester food and drink scene and beyond, with a good dose of nerdery and personal stories on top, then Food About Town is for you. I've been writing and podcasting for over 10 years, and I'm so thankful for all the support from the community. Subscribe to the Food About Town podcast today and hear from the people that make and love the food and beverages you can't stop enjoying.
So, for our topic tonight, I just want to briefly introduce this with a conversation that we had on Instagram. And actually, I say we, I think it was you and Rory, Aaron, just had a little back and forth about, like, Rory saying, you know, oh, he got mentioned again. And then he basically had a recommendation that we need to talk to baristas more.
Yep.
That we are.
Which we had mentioned on the last one, too.
What's that?
We had mentioned reaching out to some people from like Beattie and Bowes and some other coffee baristas. So
yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I saw that message and I reached out to Rory and he and I talked a little bit about it. He says, and he's right, we're owner heavy on this podcast. We talk to people who are getting into the business of coffee. We talk to people, you know, whose ambitions in coffee have taken them kind of to that level. I was thinking about it. I think, is it only three of our guests didn't have like coffee businesses or had never had coffee businesses? So like Bob, Mary, and Janine.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So like everyone else either is like a shop owner, roastery, or like has like some coffee brand or business that they're at the top of. So yeah. I think Rory probably, you know, good point. And we're 17 minutes in, first Rory mentioned. So again, we're doing great, guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, it got me thinking about baristas and why a barista might want to go on a podcast like ours. Like, what is, like, or what kind of barista might want to be on this podcast? And it kind of got me, you know, I took a step back and I'm like, what do baristas do? You know, like,
right.
What is it that they do with coffee, that is germane to like what we talk about or that they might want to talk to us about?
What is it that you say you do here?
Yeah, I wanted to go there. So what would you say you do here?
Do you make coffee?
Yes, dude, my judge should make more movies. I was thinking about like the barista's task, right? Like we kind of, you know, we've dived into a lot of what owners do. They set the vision. They have like a taste that they want to replicate or create or, you know, kind of promulgate in the world. they have to cover all the business side things. They have to do all the hiring and all the training and all, you know, we know kind of, we've covered that a lot. And I came up with this phrase, and I'll just let you guys react to it before I start to break it down. But I believe that the barista's task is to make coffee delightful.
I was looking at the little sheet, the cheat sheet you gave us, and I love the way you think about stuff and that you got it broken down into different delights here. I agree with that for a lot of it, for what it is.
I think the word is, I think, a great choice, especially those that are dedicated to doing that. You know, even if this isn't a forever thing, being dedicated to it while you're doing it is making coffee delightful.
And I think where I was trying to figure out with that is I don't like delightful in and of itself, because surface level, it seems like it's covering up something almost, right? Like, I'm going to sugarcoat this so that you like it in a way. And I think you're going to dispel this a little bit. What I like about the word, though, is if you think about it, it really is the idea of creating an experience, right? And with that is going to come so many different aspects of interaction and communication and, since we're talking about coffee preparation and things like that, right? Delivering an experience, like, we all know a good and a bad experience. I could tell you about literally the worst restaurant experience I've ever had, which was a couple months ago. And we can all tell you the best cup of coffee we've ever had. So,
yeah, and that's where I was thinking, kind of dovetailing with that, is it's not making coffee necessarily delightful. I think it is making a delightful experience. But that's also, I don't think, really depends on which thing, because if you go into a high volume shop, the person who is taking your order is a big part of your experience. But they might not be making your drink in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Right.
So you've got the people who are, taking your order. You've got people who are doing pour overs. You have people who are just, pouring batch into cups. You have the people who are pulling shots, and you might have somebody even doing something else. So, each part of the process is contributing to your overall experience, but each person doesn't touch coffee necessarily in every moment of your time there. So I think, to me, it's everybody's contributing to the experience, and hopefully, each step is contributing to a great coffee experience as well. But I think the overall experience is what they are providing. So that's, these are all subtle differences, of course, but I think that's where I would lie on that. Yes, it's a delightful experience, but delightful is different for every person.
Sure.
So, absolutely.
That's the read and react. That's where I think the best servers and restaurants, the best, people you're interacting with, the people who are keeping the workflow going and bantering with you while it's going on, it's master level stuff. So I'm excited to dive in and, hear your rubric.
Yeah, so I think I agree with a lot of what you just said, and that is what led me to the word delightful. I think saying enjoyable is a little bit of a different experience, because when you delight in something, maybe even like some of the stupidest things about it bring something out in you. You know what I mean? Like, when you spread delight, it doesn't have to be, I don't think it has to be tied to like the enjoyment of the core product, of the drink. You guys just froze up on me.
Yep.
Or any one aspect, like the vibe, the design.
Like, delight, part of it can be from a ceramic cup versus a paper cup.
Yeah. And I think those little things make a difference, right? Like that, those little touches, the thoughtfulness, but that's also the choice of, that's the choice of the shop, not the barista themselves.
Sure.
And I think if we isolate to what the barista has control over, I think that's where personality comes in. That's where skill comes in. It is using, absolutely, using what's provided to you in the best way, or in, you know, an efficiently very good way. And that's where it's also like, yeah, we like a ceramic cup. That's not the choice of the barista that we can have a ceramic cup or not. So like I think it's easy to go into the whole experience, but how are they making it better? How are they making you feel? And sometimes it is feeling. And yeah, obviously pulling a good shot and making a good pour over, or, you know, doing that stuff. Yeah, of course, that's a huge part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So like that's where it starts, right? Like the skill of making coffee, like the sensory delight. And like, what does a barista have to know, right? They have to know how to use the tools and the machines. They have to know how to taste it so they can dial it in. They have to like know the basic principles in theory. Hey, if this isn't working, I'm dialing this in. This doesn't taste good. How do I make it taste better?
Right.
And not always how can I make it taste exactly how I want, but sometimes it's just, well, better than this thing I'm getting that I'm not liking. So like super high bar on skills. The sensory delight sets a very high bar on skills. But we have to recognize there are plenty of shops out there where none of these skills are operative, and they're still making people delight in the experience of their coffee shop. Like there's still baristas out there who are just a delight to the people around them.
Yep, for
even
sure.
Even though they like either they don't know how to make coffee, or the people making it, the person making it, doesn't know how to make coffee, right? So like that, I mean, that is not entirely uncommon with a super high bar, you know, on the skill of making coffee and on sensory delight. So that's where I think we get into kind of the next one, the social delight, like the hospitality to guide the guests, to be welcoming, to make sure everyone feels like if I have to interact with this person, it's going to be a safe interaction. It's going to be a positive interaction. And then the ability to make conversation and be empathetic and be like, you might be in a huge hurry and just want your drip. You might be in a place where you have no idea what you want, and we have to guide you through this process. You might be in a place where you just need some human connection, right? And there's a huge line. Maybe we don't have time for that. So how do I, in a very short amount of time, make the human connection? So empathy's huge. Yeah. And then there's the patience for, you know,
the people.
Yeah. The people like, listen, I love my sister, but her drink is the Starbucks caramel macchiato. She's going to walk into my shop, or it's not mine, but like the shop I'm affiliated with, AMFM, she's going to be like, where's the caramel macchiato? You know, like, what can I get? Or like, you know, the person who comes in and is like, I just want something light and sweet, right? So like the patience to be like, how do I guide this? It's all like what it boils down to is all so much emotional labor that we put on baristas.
Absolutely.
It's a burden that hits them. Like if a slow day is like 50 interactions as a roaster, that sounds horrible.
Right. I know.
That would take me out, man. So like,
well, and it goes the other way too. I stopped into AMFM last Friday or two Friday.
I think I just missed you by like 10 minutes. Josiah said.
Yeah. And Josiah was in there and it was like sort of dead, right? There was a couple people, and he recognized me, so we were chatting back and forth, and it was like 10-15 minutes, and I was like, I want to keep talking to you. I haven't gotten to know you that well, and this is awesome. Great space to do this, right? And I was like, I could tell he kind of wanted the connection a little bit. I hope he did, since I'm putting this on him. which is going to go to my second point, by the way. And I was like, I gotta go. Like, I gotta get on the road. I'm going to Connecticut, right? But it goes the other way. Like, I walk into a shop and maybe I know the barista, maybe I don't, or maybe I know their name because I go in a bit, and I'm expecting an interaction, right? I'm going there to see that social interaction. And everybody might be doing that, right? If you have like 10 people coming in to talk to Bob at Ugly Duck, he might be having a bad day and not want to do that.
Hit after hit. Yeah, exactly. Like you can't imagine like just the energy it must take. And like, I know for some people that's very energy giving, right?
Sure. Extrovert, introvert.
Yeah. Baristas don't have a choice. You know what I mean? It's not like they can be like, sorry, I'm an introverted barista. You're going to have to talk to that person. Right. Like,
it's just, unless you're Wade.
No.
Well, that's why I don't work the bar, right? Like,
yeah. And that's like, I mean, that amount of like, also like, yeah, people expect you to be up. And, you know, there's also there's a, you know, negative stereotype that will cross, you know, depending on shops, the negative judgy, the judgy person. And I think a lot of people really spend a lot of effort to not come across that way. And especially, hey, if you're normally a neutral flat person, right? Like I get up for podcasts and I'm doing all the thing. Like when I'm doing my day job, I am neutral and flat, and right. I do my job all day. And when I'm interacting with people, it's factual and direct. When we're doing this, yeah, it's fun and bouncy, but that's we're doing the job. We're doing the bit. Right. I mean, being up all day. I know when Carrie goes to conventions and she has to be up all day and people expect that energy from her, she is shot. It might be a 6-hour day and she is done. It's just all over. It's just a lot of energy, a lot of mental energy for those days. And I'm glad you mentioned it because that is work. Yeah. Let alone doing the rest of the job that everybody, hey, the coffee part of the job, but that mental energy is significant. And then not only talking about what we've also talked about is like educating without educating. And then you're like on that delicate balance of you want to inform people about this amazing coffee that you might love, but you also have a line of customers. You have to do things quickly. You have to not turn them off by giving too much information. I mean, if you're talking to me, you can't turn me off by giving me too much information.
Right.
But so many people, that's fundamentally bad for their experience.
Right.
Oh, that like having to read and react to every single person's interest and non-interest and all that stuff. It's I'm glad I just look at spreadsheets most of the day.
I mean, and I can empathize a little bit. I mean, that's what teachers do.
Yeah.
I saw 60 kids today. You know, they come in, I've got to gauge their emotional, wherewithal every day they walk into the room, and, all 12 of them.
Which numbers they're counting to right now, it's confusing. How far do you count for the current meme? It's hard to know.
Oh, Chris.
How can they keep up with it? There's way too many numbers to count to.
Chris, you and I are going to switch jobs for a day.
Oh, I would love to annoy children for a couple days. Oh,
these kids would eat you alive. But
you can Chris into your class. But Chris, you kind of shaded into kind of the next category I was thinking about, because I honestly, I hope if we do get some baristas on the show, like the emotional labor of it all gets said. I know that might be hard, and I know we might be biting off a little more than I can chew. It's more of a job for Chris. He's more of like the human interest, interviewer. But I think we just can't underestimate that aspect. But when you were talking about educating, there is like an intellectual delight to it. And in this category is the reason I landed on delight. No one necessarily enjoys lectures about coffee. But you can have knowledge about coffee and delight in it, delight in having that knowledge. And like you might be making the coffee and remember something about it. And that's where you have that added experience of delight. Mm. And so like for me, like having kind of the knowledge to answer people's questions, but I focus on coffee. I'm like, if people have questions about coffee, there's so much more going on in a shop. That barista has to know about their ingredients. Like, do you guys make this in-house? If not, where do you buy it? Why do you buy it from there? Like, my cousin does this. He makes this. It's so much better.
Is it gluten-free? Kind of, is it vegan? Do you have a vegan alternative? Does it taste as good?
All of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All the alternatives, everything, all the dietary restrictions that come into play, all the allergies. And then there's this interesting thing about... Sorry.
I was going to say, but the other thing there, though, is I feel like, you know, along with this whole social thing, when you get that customer, even if it is the one out of the 10, when Chris walks in the room and you've got a barista who's delighting in his knowledge, that makes your whole day. Like, that might make your whole week, you know, if you get that guy who comes in and is like,
yeah,
give me everything you've got. And, you know, I think that's where we get back to the service aspect, is that barista might want to say, hey, I want to talk to you for like an hour, but I've got six other people who just want caramel macchiatos, right? And so balancing that.
Well, and I think that's, I do want to take a step back. I'm really glad this was brought up originally, because I think we have some really interesting conversations in front of us. I think this, all these different angles, I'm really excited about this concept and about the topic. So like I said, I just wanted to stop for a second, just say this was great that it came up, and I'm excited to see how they go, and I'm excited to have them. I mean, obviously we have friends who are actively behind the bar that are easy to get, and I obviously would love to talk to some of those. Like, who wouldn't want to have Adam Solomon over for a while? Like, that's a delightful thing to do. But we also, we have so many people we don't know that well, and that's the part I'm equally as excited about. Not that I'm not excited about Adam Solomon coming over, but you know, I think that's the thing, is like, we have so much to talk about. What is this today versus what it was X amount of time ago? Is it different? Like, what's going on now versus before? This is just really cool. That's the education thing is fascinating, because it's every spot, every moment, every ingredient, everything can be education if you do it with that deft touch.
Right.
If you don't go into it like a stuffy professor, but if you go into it more based on, like,
it's not a TED talk.
The initial thing, the empathy, right?
Yep.
Like knowing what someone is there for and why this or that fact might be interesting. Absolutely.
Yeah. I wanted to bring up another thing. I was talking to the owner of a coffee shop that we haven't mentioned in a long time, New City.
This is a barista episode.
Well, sure. Oh, gosh. But the baristas at this coffee shop are in a neighborhood that is not traditionally the coffee shop going place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so not only are they fighting the, you know, the stigma of, you know, a roaster, specialty coffee shop, but many of the people in the neighborhood who is where they want to serve are probably, and I'm guessing here, not familiar with what they do and why they should come there. And, you know, I've talked to them a couple times and it's gone really well. Like, they've made a name for themselves. They get recognized. They've got the locals that come in, which is exactly what they wanted. And so you might be fighting like two or three different levels of educating that you need, that you might be doing.
Yeah, and sometimes it is purely serving, right? And that's the other thing, is this is a service job in the end, right? You're there serving a customer. You're serving your patrons and the community. And I think, one, that's what that place does very well, is, hey, you can get a cheap drip coffee. Well, that means they're serving different clientele. The front end of that business, it should still be about compassion and, you know, delight. Yay, they're delighting somebody that comes in and needs a cheap cup of coffee.
Yeah,
they can delight them with that day. That's equally as important as us talking about fancy processed coffees that we're getting somewhere. Is someone's delighted because they got a hot damn cup of coffee in the morning that was not bad,
right?
Like, and they got to give them that. Hey, you know, somebody who might be going through things, hey, you're giving that moment of something good.
Right.
You're doing that.
They might be getting that delightful connection they need that day.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't have friends at work. Maybe they're socially isolated and they're making that one touch connection. Maybe in general, this is going to be their third place we want. And they know that they can go there and have that experience.
Yeah. But that third place, right, we've talked about, the third place doesn't exist without people And it's the people who are at the front end that make a place feel like that. Yep. It's not because somebody says it's a third place. It's the people that make it that way. And it's always the people at the front end that are doing that.
Yeah.
They're doing the work to make a place feel like that, because you can say all the things. You can have all the couches. You can have the soft lights. You can do this. You can have the workspaces.
Yeah, exactly.
If the people suck, you're not going to want to go there and make it your third place.
Nope.
Those people are the place that make the place worth being at.
That is, yeah, that's absolutely true. So since we touched on New City, you know who used to work at New City is Josiah, the manager at AMFM. So what? I think we got to get Josiah on, and he will he'll have some insight into like that side of things. And then now working with someone like me, who's, you know, obviously obsessed with the other side of things, and he's the perfect counterweight for that. So there's we've kind of touched on it, but there is kind of a third aspect of intellectual delight that I wanted to hit on.
Yeah.
Where this was huge when we were at Joe Bean. And Aaron, I don't know, like, cause you were on the bar a little bit after I had positioned out, like, we were expected to kind of have a good idea of like the food and coffee scene in Rochester.
Sure.
And then when people come in either from out of town or just like looking to have a night out or whatever, like they would, you know, they would ask us, we were expected to know things about like, this is where you should eat, you know, go to the Strong Museum, the Red Wings are playing, but you know, like there were so many different contours to that. And so like baristas are kind of, they get asked these things like, hey, do you know any good restaurants in the area? You know, I'm in town for the night, or I'm in town for a couple nights.
Yeah,
or,
you roll in you know, the morning, you're at 8 o'clock, you're going to coffee. You're not thinking about dinner that night, really.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's an interesting piece that like a lot of baristas know their neighborhoods incredibly well. So like I think about kind of the, I don't want to use the word conflict, but the conversation maybe that's going on around Ugly Duck, around that area, and how they're going to develop the green right across the street from Ugly Duck. You know, been a lot of development in that area. There's been a lot of just boxy apartments, which like, you know, for better or worse, like I don't need to get into the politics of that. And now they have this one nice, could be a green space, and they're talking about building more
affordable apartments.
It's not apartments. I don't think it's like 11.
It's a form of affordable housing.
Affordable.
Oh, one of those projects. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a Don. I just saw it on Dunwoody is involved with that.
Yeah. It's the, I assume it's those
Hinge homes, I think is what they're
Hinge
calling
home.
It.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah.
That's
so those are they're manufactured. It's the new manufactured housing that is very en vogue with, you know, providing spaces that are available for people that you can buy and you can be part of a neighborhood. So that much I like, but yeah, it's hard without those spaces. But to go back to your comment about, you know, expecting the baristas to know your community. That's huge. Like we've talked about coffee and travel a lot. And to me, that is one of the tools that I use,
right?
Where I will have a giant list, but the people who I trust to ask that question beyond almost anywhere else are baristas. One, because I typically, and this is an expectation that might be unfair, I'm expecting baristas to be cool people.
Right. You have a stereotype of who they are.
I'm a roaster.
Yeah. I'm expecting the baristas to be cool people, right? That they might like arts, they might like food, they might like the stuff that they're involved with, that they like the place they're in.
If like, Wade is at the bar, you're getting a recommendation to go see the Red Wings and eat a hot dog.
Hey, you know what? Also a great recommendation. But that's,
well, and I what prospects are in town, and you know who to watch out for, which at bats are going to be good. So you know, you don't have to pick them the whole time, just to the ones I tell you to.
Yeah, so it is one of my things, and that's I do. It's not obviously if they're busy, I don't do that. Right, it's bad etiquette, but I do. Like I reference the baristas, right? I will ask that question, like if I'm going to one other coffee shop, what's the place I should go? And if I'm going to a restaurant or food spot, where should I go? And sometimes they'll give me a whole thing, and sometimes they won't. And I just, I've gotten to so many amazing places because, you know, they're connected to the community and they care about the place they're in. So that, especially shop that's good, right? A really good shop. I expect them to have that knowledge. Not like obviously to, you know, an insane level, but give me one thing that you care about. But I think that's also getting to know the person you're across, even for a moment. And I would say being a good customer, treat the people that are serving you like people, because they will also then treat you like a person and not just like somebody who's attacking them,
right?
Asking for everything. So, be a good customer too.
Well, and you've got another point down here on your little cheat sheet, about company values.
Mm.
And through all the things
real quick, can I just tie a bow on one point I was making before?
Sure.
That with the Hinge Homes and everything's going on across the street from Ugly Duck, one of the main advocates for turning that into a green space. And when I say advocates, I mean like she showed up at the Speak to Council. She has been vocal on her socials, is Mary, who was on the show. And I know she's technically a manager, but is also like a barista, also a public interface for Ugly Duck. So like talk about knowing and investing in your neighborhood, your city, like actually being out here, going to a city council meeting, going to a Speak to Council, which I happened to be at, and was just a really interesting time, especially with the people that I got to sit with and hang with at that. But she got up, she spoke, and was just like a very clear advocate for the interests of that neighborhood. Well, and I thought, you know, that's amazing. Like, on top of everything else she does for the neighborhood at Ugly Duck, you know, to add that's incredible.
Yeah. Being a great communicator if you're a great communicator at the front of the shop, you might be a great communicator for other things you care about too.
Well, and I can guess too, that she's not coming at it from the standpoint of we want this green space because it benefits our shop. You know, there's a lot of research out there talking about the benefits of green spaces and the lack of green spaces in urban areas, and how, you know, it's important for mental health, it's important for community building, it's important for all of these other aspects. You know, and so it's, you know, I think you would find, you know, we can stereotype baristas in this, that they are caring about these other things as well. And you know, that's the important part of their values also. And they're a reference for the stores that they're at, right? You know, Joe Bean wanted us to display a certain level of hospitality, a certain level of love for coffee, a certain level of love for Rochester. You know, and I would guess that Ugly Duck and Fuego and all of the other baristas working at these shops are similar.
For sure.
Definitely. And that kind of gets into the last category of delight. Like I called it aesthetic delight. I didn't know how to term this exactly, but you have to inhabit a story, right? You're inhabiting a story about your shop and the company values that built that shop. You're inhabiting a story about the coffees you're serving. You're inhabiting a story about the coffee scene you're a part of, right? Because, you know, I assume in most cities, and it's certainly true in Rochester, a lot of these baristas know each other. A lot of them visit each other at their jobs and talk about being baristas. And some of the Ugly Duck industry nights have provided, like, you know, like a more focused forum for that kind of thing. And so you are inhabiting this whole story when you're interacting with a customer, when you're preparing a coffee, when, you know, like there are so many different things weighing on that barista. Like how do I manage the customer who comes in and says, I hate this shop, they suck. I've got like five friends who work there, man. Like I got no beef. Like, why are you telling me? Like,
right.
I'm sure there's plenty of that. Or like, you know, you know what your shop should do? It should add food. Like, well, okay, yeah, we're not that shop, you know, like so many expectations, so many things that just get thrown at them just from nowhere.
Right. And I was going to say, that's the perfect example of how they have to, display, they have to convince the customer or move the customer to what the values of that shop are. Why don't we have food? Right.
Right.
And that's that emotional spent. That's that. Oh my gosh.
Well, I mean, they're the front end, right? They're the, for all intents and purposes, you know, a lot, most places, you don't know who the owner is. You know who the barista is. You know who the person who's serving you is. And they are the manifestation of the shop to you, right? They are the representative that is showing all of that. But yeah, that's a loaded thing, right? And that is part of the weight of being that. Like, you're not just me sitting in a cubicle hammering out spreadsheets all day. You are representing your business as a front person all the time.
Exactly.
It's significant work, and those that are great at it, it's such a benefit for the customer, for the shop, for everybody.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we have a lot of great examples here in town. And so hopefully we can get some on and hear from them. You know, we're in danger of this being a pretty lengthy recording. So, Chris, do we want a break, or do we want to just power through and cut it where we cut it? Like,
I mean, we're at 50 right now. I mean, I think we've rounded out with a good, I mean, it feels like we've had at least a pretty complete conversation. I'm not sure where else you were hoping to go with it.
Yeah, the only thing I want to say is, like, baristas mostly don't have the support or resources to fulfill this task.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the job doesn't pay enough. Guests are adversarial or unrealistic in their expectations. The industry doesn't provide enough affordable resources. You guys know World of Coffee is going on right now, which is kind of like the new expo. It's out in San Diego. And like, can you imagine the financial commitment it would take to like fly baristas out to San Diego, even though like it might be incredibly valuable for your shop, fly them out to San Diego. They get to stay there. How many nights they get tickets to World of Coffee, all this different stuff. Like, I mean, it's just the industry doesn't provide a lot of affordable resources. There are some, they are out there. In general, though, like, you have to pay to go to this city to do this class, that this, that, the other. And I think there's maybe an issue where like baristas don't support each other a whole lot. And like older baristas are maybe more impatient with younger baristas not having all the skills and all the acumen they have than they are willing to like bring them along and say like, this is how I got there. And it's, you know, it can be a position with not a whole lot of clout or social register. And so like, if you feel like someone's not as good at you as you at it, or just, you know, kind of bad at it, like, I can see where you really start to judge them instead of saying like, oh wait, I was there once, I had to learn this too. Even if I learned it faster, I had to learn it, and then bring someone along. So I just think like, when I think about baristas and the tasks they have, like, there are so many instances where they don't have the support. They don't have the resources. They deserve higher pay. They deserve benefits, because like, it's a physical job that like can carpal tunnel, standing on your feet all day, like, you know, standing over an espresso machine, you get those neck aches, you know, it can be a whole lot of things. And you know, we've talked about some of the difficult things with guests and stuff. Like, I'm certain we have, and I don't want to go find it necessarily, but I'm certain we have in our community stories of baristas getting swung on by people who, you know, were just
angry
for any reason. Yeah. I mean, like, people who are in maybe a difficult point in their lives, or who just have a ton of privilege and entitlement, and made that horrible decision that this person in front of them was going to be the subject of their violence, or the object of their violence. So, I think just have it tough.
Yeah. And I think your point of, you know, when we're talking about all these things that we value, right, that we value highly in these people that, you know, make our experience great, as people that care about coffee and care about the experience, we do value that. right? That is, it's true. That is a value. We value that thing. I don't think a lot, not everybody does. And I think we do believe that, yes, obviously, you know, being able to do this as something that you are dedicating your time to for a period or an extended period or longer is valuable, and being an expert at being great at hospitality in this specific field should be valued because it makes the experience that much better. I mean, this is when I say when I travel, I talk to baristas, it's because I value their opinion so much that they're who I want to talk to about this. I value what they do. And it really matters when the people care, and that's worth something. And yeah, I think having that ability to expand your knowledge, be better at your craft, and this is a craft, and it's also can be a vocation, and it can be, and or should be able to be a career. And it's a great thing to do, to be great at this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the one of the things that we don't get to hit on and that makes it tough is for many people, it's not a career, right? It's a job that they walk into and walk out of. And that's all it might be, you know, even at some of the most, you know, respected coffee places and roasteries that we go to. And one of the things that I've thought about is, you know, I was at, you know, a not to be named, or I was looking at going to a not to be named coffee shop, and I get out of work at 3 and they close at 2. And it was like one of these things. I'm like, oh, why aren't they open? Right. But their business flow probably doesn't support it. Right. And so I have to respect that choice. And at the same time, one of the things I always come back to is respecting these guys who wake up early in the mornings and are working on a Saturday and a Sunday, right? I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I want them to, right? So.
Yeah. And it's, I think what we can say as, you know, people who love this industry, who love the people that make it happen, we respect the work that they do. We respect how much they matter to everything we all enjoy in coffee. And I'm really excited to have these conversations coming up, because I think there's always more to learn, and I want to learn more about that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So
Wade,
let's close on the pitch. If you are a barista and you want to be heard in any way, maybe you just want to send us a letter to read on the air so that you can stay anonymous. We would prefer if you want to be interviewed. We would love to interview you. Maybe you need to call in, kind of like I'm doing right now. We can do that. Or maybe you know another barista who has a story that you think needs to be shared. Look, we believe in you. We love the baristas of this scene, this city. We think there are great stories out there. We want to advocate for y'all, even if that's in some way like, hey, it's hard out here. How can we contribute to telling the story that makes it better for you? We want to do that. We want to be that kind of positive force for baristas here in Rochester. So let's hit us up on our socials, Dialed In. You can reach me at welcome@aporiacoffee.com. Aaron, you want to give out like an email or a website or something?
Oh, yeah. I'm at aaronpascucci.com, aaronmarkpascucci@gmail.com. I think my Instagram is the same, Aaron Pascucci. That's Pascucci for us.
Pascucci. Yes.
Yeah.
Cue the op. Let's tell the stories. Let's get out there. We'll put something on our socials too that's more of a focused post about this. We love y'all and we want to hear from y'all.
Yeah. So make sure you check out all the other shows on the Lunch at Door Podcast Network. If you have questions, you can reach out at hello@lunchdoor.org to us. If you have something you want to talk about in the arts that you are involved with, or if you have other things you want to talk about, feel free to reach out. We are excited for a couple new shows starting. Our friend Rob Bell starting Plants and Beats on the network. We'll have our first official Lunchador episode coming out in the next week or so, which is going to be great. And we have a library show with Rochester's Book Club coming up called Reader's Advisory. Ooh. That I'm super excited about. This is going to be really cool. It's something I've been hoping to do for a long time. So we're recording our first episode in the next 3 weeks, I think. So this is a great time to be doing podcasting in Rochester, and to Wade and Aaron, stay
dialed in.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
If there's espresso to be made, who are you going to call? Baristas.